So, I wanted to bring a message to you today about how we move through being lost or feeling loss. Not only in a holiday season, which can be so bittersweet with both coming together and feeling emptiness, but also as a community who has experienced a significant loss in the couple past years, and perhaps even among you feeling a sense of being lost in the wilderness together, unsure where you might be headed next, trying to figure it out in the midst of so much lostness. So to do that, I wanted to use some pop music from our teal hymnal. Real contemporary stuff called the 23rd Psalm. But by Bobby McFerrin. Okay, you might know this one. Let me read it to you. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all I need. She makes me lie down in green meadows beside still waters. She will lead. She restores my soul. She rights my wrongs. She leads me in the path of good things. She fills my heart with songs. People know this, yes? Even though I walk through a dark and dreary land, there is nothing that can shake me. She has said she won't forsake me. I'm in her hand. She sets a table before me in the presence of my foes. She anoints my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely, surely goodness and kindness will follow me all the days of my life. And I will live in her house forever, forever and ever. Glory be to our mother and daughter and to the Holy of Holies. As it was in the beginning, is now and ever shall be, world without end. Amen. Now, when Bobby McFerrin wrote that version of Psalm 23, they described that they were in their study doing the musician thing, getting their work done. And in their study, they were contemplating Scripture, and they were wondering about how it is that Scripture, for them in their Christian tradition, can be so full of an unconditional love and trust, even in the midst of being lost. And yet, it can be so hard to actually feel that love when you are lost. And in a moment, they decided they would leave their study. They walk outside, and as they walk outside, they notice their partner and children in the kitchen, our living room, I believe. And for them in that moment, they said, ah, that's the glimpse of what this is talking about, the glimpse of being found in a relationship. I will write this psalm to that relationship. Now, not all of us have relationships with our family members that feel like that, especially during the holidays. We have to find that kind of relationship elsewhere. And some of us get that in our families, some of us don't. But there's also a psalm in that moment of being found and feeling shepherded through a dark and dreary land. There is actually a psalm before that psalm, Psalm 22. That starts like this. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer. And by night, but I find no rest. It's a psalm of distress before there's a psalm of being found by any shepherd. And I sense that for each community and each of us as we go through being lost, that we first have to experience the distress, the moment of feeling alienated, and honor it before we ever feel some warm and fuzzy shepherding through the dark and dreary land. But what is it between the distress, which is also sacred, and the feeling shepherded, which is also sacred, both? What is it that happens in the in-between, the being lost in sacred dark wood, that would actually let us, for once again, feel unconditional loving? Now, about a month ago, I was in Boston. Restorative justice work I do looks at folks who have caused harm in the prison system, but also folks who maintain the prison system, to look at ways that instead of breaking laws, we actually break relationships when we cause harm, and then how do we heal relationships after we've caused harm. And when I was in Boston, I was working with correctional officers and wardens of prison with some of my colleagues. And to break the ice, because that's an icy crowd, to break the ice, we did, you know, the silly games that you must do to break ice. And we asked the whole circle, this group of wardens and then this group of correctional officers around an altar with heart stones. We asked, if you had a parallel life, what would your job have been? What was your parallel job in a parallel life? And around we go in the circle, and there's farmers, and there's poets, and there's some kind of a couple professional sports people. Some people just want to be home with their families. And it gets to me, and I suddenly have perfect clarity about everything I've ever done in my life and that I could have done in my life from childhood to my now adulthood. And I realize if I could have been anything beside the minister, I would be a wilderness survivalist. Yes, thank you. There was a clap. Yeah. Ministry and wilderness survival is actually the same thing. It's actually totally the same thing. But here, follow me down this parallel here. Okay, elementary school. My family and I would go hiking and camping, and my parents, not knowing what they were setting me up for, bought me a book called Take a Hike, and it has all the ways to survive the wilderness, mostly related to overpacking things. So out we would go with my family, and my, you know, my dad's there, my mom's there before the divorce, and I had the biggest backpack, and it was full of everything that they might not have taken because of that book. I had 2 rolls of toilet paper, and I had snacks for all of us no matter how long we were going to be out. And even if you had a first aid kit, I had 2 first aid kits that I probably stole from underneath your sink. Yeah. Then, now as an adult, the way I decompress from restorative justice is a very guilty binging obsession on Netflix, which is a show that's actually very awkward to try to describe in a church, called Naked and Afraid. Anyone know this show, Naked and Afraid? Yeah, thank you. Brave souls raising their hands. Yeah, Naked and Afraid is an amazing, awkward show. In this amazing, awkward show, it's very contemporary, kind of Adam and Eve, really. 2 people dropped off in the middle of a space, kind of foreboding, usual kind of wilderness space, and they're left there without any clothes, and usually a pot, a knife, or a flint to start a fire, and then they have to survive there for 21 days, and sometimes in some episodes, 28 days. This is amazing. This is what I do in my spare time. It should be questioned. Yeah, it really should be questioned. But what I think I love about it, if you'll let me stretch a metaphor, which ministers often do, I think what I love about it is the ways people make ways out of no ways. Yeah? People find ways to survive that which is very hard to survive. And whether I'm sneaking that with food in my bed, watching Naked and Afraid, or whether that's in circle, talking about what might have been the worst thing you've ever done in your life, and finding out if you could ever feel redeemed about it afterwards. We make ways out of no ways. But what I also love is that I think this wilderness survival parallel Sam has something to say about what it means when a people feel lost. And this is what I think she would say to us. She would tell us that you must find shelter, you must find water, you must find food, and you must build the fire. Now, what do we mean by this shelter? when we are a lost people or when we feel lost as a people, it can feel as if the very space of our belonging is gone. We do not know who we are anymore or whose we are anymore. It feels as if the space that holds me no longer holds me. I feel a directionlessness. So our first task when we are lost in the in-between distress and feeling shepherded is to say, what is it that can hold me even as I am lost? Now, for me, this comes really clear with a friend of mine who's an actual survivalist. And he will quickly tell me that my metaphor isn't real, and that he actually knows how to survive in the wilderness. And we were walking one day through a really beautiful spot, and we started kind of jostling with each other and challenging each other, and then we made a bet, and then we Googled it, and I lost, okay? And the bet, if I lost, was that I had to build a shelter there, which is a strange kind of way to lose a bet. You know, go build a shelter. So he, of course, really just wanted to tell me how to build a shelter and watch me get into it, which is fine. I'll go with it. I start to dig a hole. Here I go. I dig a hole. I'm in the mud because I lost the bet. I start to pile dead leaves on top of me. And I find, much to his joy, because he was right, but I find as I have dug myself this earthen cradle, and as I have gathered the leaves over my body, that the leaves, almost as if like a down comforter, create a surprising warmth. And I am struck because what that means for what we're talking about here is it could actually be the things that were once alive for us but are no longer alive. It can be the memory of what it felt like to be alive, to be loved, to feel direction, to feel closeness. It can be the memories of the ways we once felt those things that suddenly shelter us at a time when we don't think we have them. It can actually be that we have lived through a life-death life cycle before. Like a leaf will remind you that we know once again we could survive this life-death life cycle now. Shelter. Water. So when we are lost and trying to keep ourselves alive, we become dehydrated. And the mystery of that dehydration is that the very thing we are is water. So the trick to surviving being lost is to take in the very thing that you are, even though the very thing you are is changing. To find the way to drink in the very thing, the very most base level thing that you are, water, so that you can remind yourself and replenish yourself as you are still in the midst of changing something. This is a holy religious question. When you feel parentless, what is the widest cradle of your belonging? When you feel parentless, when you feel no belonging, what is the widest cradle that could hold you? Now, for some of us, this might be the sense that we are of sacred matter, that we have emerged from the earth, and therefore, even when no one else is around, we still belong to the earth. For some of us, this is looking at distant skies, distant stars, and thinking of the longest story. For some of us, this is the sense that there is a holy one, a sacred creator that sustains and cares for all of us. For some of us, this is the question, when I am alone, who do I belong to? In a meditation a friend taught me one time, she asked that each of the people in the room sit and feel their leg bones, these really big, beautiful bones in our thighs here, and to remember how many beings went into the fact that you have those bones. And then she would ask us to touch, if our hands are clean, our mouths, and the tears of our eyes, and know that they are primordial seas, to know that that is how old your body is, no matter how lost you feel. And then she would say, do you feel your back, the hair on your back, or the way that your skin is on your clothes? If you can remember how many people came in, that you would be here today, that you are the dream of your ancestors, that even when you are alone, all of those people stand behind you. Water. That is water. Food. When we are lost, we are weakened. And when we are lost, we are panicked. We literally don't know what to take into our bodies. Some of us, in our panic, reach for anything we can get a hold of, whether that's food or social media or gossip or relationship. We grab and we grab and we grab and we grab. And others of us starve ourselves, push ourselves back from anything we might take in. Now, the trick to eating to survive when being lost is a beautiful diet of fat and oil. Yeah, you're excited. Yeah, smiling. Fat and oil. Yeah, this is the diet of being lost. Fat and oil in a culture that wants us to starve to be the tiniest forms of ourselves so that we might be productive. The goal when we are lost is once again to feel the fluidity, to become the widest, most holding, most curved ways of ourselves, rather than the most rigid and most tiny versions of ourselves. We become abundant. Now, in Troop, in Pasadena, the land that we are on was once the land of the Tongva people, is still the land of the Tongva people. And one of their primary sources of fat were acorns, right? So the beauty of an acorn, though, as a metaphor for being lost, is that you are literally taking in something that represents the beginning of all things. That the very thing when we are lost that we have to take in is the thing which is most potential for creativity. So this is the sacred diet of fat and oil, the fat of ritual, the fat of art, the fat of music, the fat of relationship, the fat of solitude. The very things that the dominant culture thinks are non-productive are the things we have to take in when we are lost. It's not more work, it's more ritual. It's not more doing, it's more relating. The very thing we think we don't have time to do is the very thing that will nourish us when we feel weakened. Fat, sacred fat. Fire. Fire, if you watch Naked and Afraid, is very important. In fire survival situations, it's not only keep things away as a predator would be drawn away from a fire, or draw things near as a human might be drawn near to say, oh, another human is present, but it's also morale. It is a warmth that says to your body, you do not have to stay warm alone. There is fire here to help you. There is an energy in that which we thought was dead, but was actually captured sunlight, bursting forth to support you in staying warm. Fire becomes our internal witness to our loss, and it draws the external witnesses that we need to get through that loss together. As an internal witness, you have probably had the experience of watching a flame. We have one. You might have had the experience of watching a flame and needing no other conversation partner to have a full conversation, a holy conversation in your own head and heart. Fire becomes our internal witness to our lives. We are drawn to it. Fire also becomes the circle of external witnesses. Like a campfire draws out the stories that have no answer and the tales we've heard a billion times, but hear differently depending on where we are in our lives. This fire that we build together is what tells other people to witness us, not to make us feel better, but to make us feel more. The goal of the fire is to be witnessed in feeling more, that we might move towards feeling shepherded again. So what is this gift in being lost? I'll read this to you. Being lost is the possibility that we fall through the cracks of a culture's insistent plans on our productivity, and we find ourselves in sacred darkness. And in that sacred darkness, it's the possibility that we weep and we rage like Psalm 22 for the longing of relationship. And in our weeping and in our raging, it's the possibility that we gather up the leaves for shelter and we create places of refuge for ourselves through life and death. And in that refuge, it's the possibility that we drink from the waters of our widest and deepest belonging, our world, our Holy One, our ancestors, and we get surprised at who we are. And in the glimpse of who we are, it's the possibility that we take in sacred fat in creative life, our poems, our rituals, our songs, our music. And in that creative life, it's the possibility that we stumble upon the fire of relationship and warmth, and we are witnessed by the world. And in being witnessed by the world, we find ourselves found, shepherded, not even realizing it, that we are found once again and again. May it be so.